give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 48. I don't want to wait. What's up, internet? This is the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast, episode 48, recorded on March 16th, 2016, brought to you by RayRay.net and syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. I am your sexy party host, Ray Moraldi, also known as Ray Ray. If you've never listened to this podcast before, or if you don't know who I am an NBA online writer, so for the most part, you'll hear me talk about the NBA with my friends, who are mostly NBA personalities. But I also talk about my other interests, like other sports, video games, wrestling, or whatever is hot in pop culture at the moment. Sometimes I talk to personalities on other fields, like voice actors and comedians. Basically, we talk about the fundamentals of life. Normally, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Adam Jacoby, but this time around, I'm going solo. In this episode, I go old school with my friend EJ Christian of the Earnestly Speaking podcast, as we talk Dawson's Creek, and I talk to Tino Cervasio, who works for various sports channels, including SiriusXM NBA Radio, and she's also a former longtime New York Knicks sideline reporter. We talk about the NBA, of course, and whatever else came to mind. So before we get into these talks, let me remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show at RayRay.net as well as Stitcher, and this is syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. Follow me on Twitter at TheNoLookPass, and check out my other podcast at TJRWrestling.net, where I co-host the TJR Wrestling Podcast with John Canton. Okay, time to get to the good parts. Let's talk about the Creek with EJ. Old school!
Old school with Ray Ray and EJ.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. EJ Christian once again with me. How is it going?
Ray Moraldi, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. 316 day, the day we're recording this. So I wish we were doing Stone Cold Steve Austin, but I guess that's all right.
Austin 316 said I just whooped your ass.
But you know what? You know what's whipped my ass like the past couple weeks or so. Not only you brought this up, but also one of my gal pals, Sarah. She cannot get over the fact that Dawson's Creek on DVD, or I guess even on other forms of media, after season 3, plays a different theme song instead of Power Cole's "I Don't Want to Wait."
Well, I think depends when you got it. I'm about to confess something here that people who may not know this, people close to me know this and make fun of me all the time about this, but I actually am a fan of Dawson's Creek. In fact, I am actually a huge fan of Dawson's Creek. I watched the show actually originally in 98, like when it first came out. I really watched it because the storyline about Pacey and the teacher was always, to me, the salacious thing from yet that hooked me. You know, it was always that first. And so the DVDs, I guess Dawson's Creek or the writers didn't want to continue paying for the rights fees to Paula Cole. So I think that's why they changed it, more than anything else. I think they always had that theme song set aside, and then once they figured out they wanted to pay the rights fees to the DVD, cause they played the original song on all the seasons, no matter what, but for the DVD pressings and stuff, it would cost them money. And, you know, they gotta pay, I guess, a royalty for that per sale. So it was probably worth it on their end to just say screw it, just do our own theme song and be done with it.
Yeah, they have that. I know the singer is Jan Arden. I don't even know the title. I think it's like Run Like Mad or something like that. They have that song from like season 3 until the second to last episode of season 6, where it goes up to Paula Cole.
Right.
At last episode. But anyway, we're talking Dawson's Creek, everybody. And
do you like the song though? The both songs? Do you like both songs?
I love Paula Cole. I don't like this. I don't like
gonna see like, you him.
Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, so Dawson's Creek, the funny thing is that, like, I might have mentioned, EJ and I have mentioned this in a past podcast when I was still doing this for the NoLookPass.com, but we talked about Dawson's Creek for a little bit, and I had just watched, like, the entire run in 2013, like, all six seasons. I marathoned it for a few months, so...
Yeah, and that's a while, because every season of that show, it's six seasons, but they're very long. They're like 23 episodes each, sometimes a little more than that. So it's like a 45-minute show without commercials. So it's definitely a labor of love, man. It's going to take you a while to go for that. But I get why people hate the show. I get why people think it was lame. Like, you watch all the, like, the little pop culture shows, like, out of the 90s and stuff, and they'll call that show lame or whatever, boring, or just, like, stupid. Because, like, these kids who are 15 years old, and they come out the gate, and they have all these big-ass words that not even doctors use themselves. So it's one of those things where that show did not connect to the average person because of the, you know, just the way they acted, the way they talked, and all that. I don't think that show connected to the average teenager, at least in my era. Because that's my era show. That show was around the time I was still ending high school. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, we're about the same age. So, I think so. So it's like, I've heard of Dawson's Creek at the time. I just didn't watch full on because to be honest, I really wasn't watching a lot of TV other than sports during that time. So I kind of missed out on it. But at the same time, it's like, you know, I watched it because, you know, I mean, obviously, like, I love, it's not a secret, I love, like, teen dramas and whatnot, so it's not a big secret about that.
Right, but, and the thing was funny about it, too, like, when I got into it through a friend in high school who I lost contact with, like, right after that. He got me to the show, and to me, the storyline of Pacey and, what's her name again, the teacher, Tamara,
something like that.
But first of all, I thought Leo Hunley. I thought she was like a hottie, number one for age. So I love that whole storyline. I thought it was great. And that was a hook for me. That was definitely the hook. It was weird for me back then too, because I wasn't a big TV watcher back then either. I had other interests too, so I was never home to really sit and watch TV to watch shows. But that show I actually did watch week to week though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing is, like, it's a groundbreaking show in a lot of ways. Like, for the first time, I think on network TV that they had like a gay come out on that show, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then they and they had two gays kissing for the first time on network television, I believe too. So, it was definitely big on that point, and also like the way because even in this world, because the world is so cruel and strange like that. There's like a lot of there's still like a lot of people that don't accept gays at this time in 2016. But in the late 90s, early 2000s, like, when I believe it was Jen's grandma, that said we should tolerate everybody, I thought that was a huge, huge thing on the show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. The thing, and I think that show does not get a lot of credit for what it did, especially considering the demographic it was targeting. You know, it's targeting, you know, young adults, late teenagers and stuff like that. And, you know, the obviously Jack come out being gay, and, you know, the love story, the teacher and the student angle. And then of course, you know, religion, you know, was a big topic on the show between Jen and her grandmother, you know, and all that. So, I mean, they tackle a lot of issues on the show. Infidelity with parents and stuff. I mean, they tackle that show doesn't get enough credit for what it did for that demographic. I mean, the reason why I love wrestling, old wrestling, is because of the storyline. The reason why I love Dawson's Creek, the storyline. They were very interesting storylines. Now I get like some characters can be a bit annoying. I know Joey gets annoying as the show goes through the end, you know, through its years, and I, you know, obviously Dawson's annoying like throughout the show, but I don't think that show gets enough credit. And to be honest with you, I think that show now that's been done like 13 years now, I think now people can appreciate the show years later as a cult classic as opposed to a show that's current.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those shows that like you don't appreciate until it's all over. And I definitely didn't know how much of a big impact it had in the late 90s, early 2000s. But now that I watch it, like I watched it 3 years ago, it's like, wow, how come this show wasn't bigger? But, you know.
And straight up, too, Ray, straight up, also, too, a lot of those actors, they got big jobs off that show. Six women on that show. Those guys got jobs off that show. I mean, everybody got some major acting roles after that show. I mean, Katie Holmes blew up after that show. James Vanderbeek was still fairly relevant. You know, Joshua Jackson was still, you know, obviously he did Mighty Ducks years before that, but, you know, he got roles. Everybody did something on that, after that show was over. So, like I said, I think that show deserves enough credit for what it accomplished.
Yeah. I do find it funny, though, that, like, the show's called Dawson's Creek, but I thought Dawson was, like, the worst. Like, it's hard to feel sorry for the guy who basically was selfish and didn't want to give his friends props when good things happened to them. I thought it was hilarious.
I felt like the show, it's funny because it is called Dawson's Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you season one, maybe even season two, it's surrounded around Dawson. But that show, honestly, for most of its run, the central character wasn't Dawson, it was Joey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You could argue Joey was the central character of that show.
Yeah, Joey was, I think, the only one in every single episode of that show.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, Dawson, to me, like he's the most annoying character on the show. I actually started to like Dawson by season five. When his dad died, I started feeling sorry for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he goes to season six where it's a throwaway season, but it was him being an adult and working in Hollywood and whatnot, and, you know, with the director. I thought he became a little more likable after that, at that point. But it took a while for Dawson to become likable. It took him being an adult and going through things, you know, going through his father passing away and, you know, losing Joey to understand, okay, I get it. I actually didn't mind Dawson in season four when Pacey and Joey were together, because he was dating Gretchen in the show. I thought that was a good angle for it. I thought the Gretchen Dawson thing was actually a good storyline as well. So
that was just weird to me. I can never see myself in a situation where it's like, oh, I'm gonna date my former best friend's older sister. You know?
She changed me, man.
I know it happened, okay? I know it happened, but it's still super weird to me, you know? I just wouldn't touch that, is what I'm saying.
It's a small, small world there, literally. Like, what?
Yeah.
Population, what, 10?
right.
So,
whatever Creek, North Carolina, whatever they did this at, or whatever, you know? So.
Yeah, well, it's North Carolina, but it was Massachusetts, but from North Carolina, but Massachusetts was a setting. I thought that was a good angle. Obviously, I was a Pacey guy. I thought Pacey was, you know, was best for Joey, because he was an underachiever, but he made Joey better. He challenged Joey in a lot of ways, you know, and that's why I always root for him over Dawson. Who's the most annoying character in the show?
Dawson. The most annoying character? Yeah, Dawson, easily, yeah. Dawson.
What about Andy? What about Andy?
Yeah, she's annoying, but it didn't grate me as much because she wasn't on the show very long, I think. Right?
Which I hated, too, by the way. I actually liked the character a little bit. I mean, she went through a little bit of phase where, you know, okay, she's annoying now because she was having little issues and stuff, but I liked her. I'm gonna say my body too, man. She's actually a lot older. She actually was a full-blown adult when she came on that show. She was 27 years old when that show was, when she came on the show. So.
I have forgotten this yeah. already, so.
No, she was 27 years old. I checked that, in 99. And, mm-hmm. and she was maybe 8 years older than everybody else. And I was like, damn, she's a full body.
It's kinda like that.
I mean, wonder, she's freaking adult already, bro.
It's kind of like Andrea Zuckerman in Beverly Hills 90210. Like, she was, like, older than everybody else, right? Gabriel Carteris?
Yeah, I had a little crush on her. I had a little crush on Andy for a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know, but she got annoying. What's funny is that Jen, Michelle Williams, you know, when we first see her, it's like, oh, my God, Jen, there's the hottie. There it is, Dawson and Jen, and then she's going to be the Dixon. And that, because once Joey got older, you know, mm-hmm. it flipped. It became Joey being the eye candy and Jen being, okay, well, she's hot too, but whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. The thing is, it's like, I didn't buy it because I always liked Katie Holmes, like even when I first knew of her back in like 98, 99, whatever, I was like, oh man, Katie Holmes is the hottie here. And so when they did that, it's like, okay, I don't buy this because like your next door neighbor is like really, really hot. No, like I just didn't buy that, you know, Jen was the hottie and like, you know, Joy was like the girl next door, and it's like, ah, this is too rough to buy. But I did end up liking Jen later down in the series, because I didn't like her that much in season one.
Yeah, well, you know what, though? She came up a little prude, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, she's a girl from New York, and she had a lot of boyfriends, and I want to change my life, so therefore, yeah, Dawson, I'll lead you on, but I'm not sleeping with you. You know, that kind of mm-hmm. thing, and I get that.
Yeah.
I thought Jen became more fun by season three. Once mm-hmm. her and Grandma and Grams, you know, had their issues and they worked things out. Once her and Jack became a thing, the best friends, you know, what you want to call it on the show. I thought Jen became a lot more fun. I think fun in Jen was cool. I love when Jen was fun.
I also liked when Jen and Pacey tried to have sex or whatever, and it just wouldn't work out, but it was just hilarious to me how they tried to, like, get something working, and it didn't.
Yeah, we thought, well, you know, because it's funny, they're the same person. They really are, in a lot of ways, the same person, but I think ultimately it came down to the fact that they wanted, and Pacey, he wanted something else. He wanted, he wanted something more, something real, you know?
Yeah.
And Joey was that person.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, For most people, they were rooting for PC and Joey. I'm not sure. I knew anyone that was rooting for Dawson and Joey, like from what I've seen. So, how about what was I'm forgetting this. Like, what was the name of Busy Phillips' character? What about Audrey? Did you like Audrey?
Yeah, I liked her first season five when she started getting the drugs. Season six, I didn't like her again. I thought she was annoying. But Audrey at the beginning. Of season five and going through that, I thought she was great. I actually liked her and Pacey together for a little while, but like I said, that was not going to last because she's a little too much. And like I said, I think Pacey and Joey are the perfect couple, and you saw that even in season six when they were starting to consider going back out again. You know, they were the perfect couple. They were actually one of the better TV couples I've ever seen because of the differences they have in terms of lifestyles and stuff, but yet it works. Favorite season to you? What is your favorite season?
Three.
You know, it's funny. I love one because I love all season one. The beginning was the best part, but then I love three obviously because that's three was where the show changed. Three is where the show ultimately became, you know, what it's supposed to be.
It became real soapy in season three, honestly, because like seasons one and two had that like innocent, fun high school sort of thing going on, and then season three, that's when it became like really heated amongst everybody. So
I feel like with season two though, a lot of things happened that we forget about, like, you know, Abby, remember Abby dying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, because, you know, Joey goes through dating Dawson, then dating Jack. And then being Dawson again, you know, I think a lot happened in season two that we forget about. I think two has a lot more activity, but I think substance-wise, three and four are the best.
Yeah, season three really changed the dynamic because that's when Pacey and Dawson stopped becoming friends, you know, at that point.
It's really when Joey and Pacey got closer.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, the infamous crying Dawson gif that we see on the internet.
Oh, God.
That same episode where, you know, Pacey and Joey made it official, basically. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, to this day, I will never believe, you know, remember how Joey went in season three and they were on the boat and went away to the Keys, whatever the hell they want to. I will never believe to this day that they didn't have sex on that boat. They say they did it, but please, they had sex on that boat. You, there's no way in hell you're gonna be on a boat by yourself for 3 months and not even have the, you know, well, I don't know. It's TV. Well, how am I even organizing this for?
Who wouldn't, right? I mean, it's Katie Holmes for crying out loud. And it's so funny how, like, in the first few episodes where they're like, oh, I gotta teach, Joey to put on some makeup or whatever. And it's like, dude, she's wearing, like, heavy eyeliner at that point. And they're all telling her, oh, you gotta be more fashionable. And she's basically like a, you know, a girl come out of a J. Crew catalog. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
No one's buying that. No one's buying Katie Holmes, you know? So
Joey, ultimately, Joey, the reason why Joey ended up becoming the most popular one in the show and the most of all the girls, especially, is because she was so attractive and didn't have to try that hard. Like, she didn't dress up that much. I mean, even in season one, she wore sneakers, shorts, or jeans, and a shirt. That was it. And somehow her beauty upstaged Jen's. And Jen tried a little harder than Joey did. At least in the early years, too, especially.
Yeah, it just radiates. It's just there, you know? It's like, I don't know how to say it, but it just came naturally, you know what I mean?
So, yeah.
It was just there, so.
Plus the characters are way more authentic, too, I think, as well.
Yeah, I thought so, too, yeah. And, again, like, you know, you could basically picture, like, Joey as, like, the perfect girl next door. You know what I mean?
By far. She's the girl that you don't think you'll be in love with, but then, you know, as you get older, yeah. Buddy, that's big. Yep. Mm-hmm. She hooked you.
Yep.
Gotcha.
So, is Dawson's Creek your favorite teen drama ever? I mean, there's a lot out there. There's
teen drama. Yeah. I mean, if you talk about teen drama, I mean, that's the one. I had to say yes. That's the one I probably watch over and over again. At least once a year, once every 2 years. You know, I mean, I own the freaking DVDs quite a lot. So yeah, by far. I mean, I didn't get into One Tree Hill. And I didn't get into all the other shows. By far. I mean, it's actually one of my first shows ever in terms of, my personal favorites. Definitely on the guilty pleasure. Definitely I'm probably on my top of the guilty pleasure list.
Guilty pleasure? Are you sure it's really a guilty pleasure? Like, you seem to enjoy it. You don't seem to, like, have any inhibitions about it. You're just like, yeah, I love Dr.
Well, cause I just don't, you know, I'm going to swear. I don't give a f*** about what people think about me. That's why. But, I think what it is more than anything else, like, if, you know, it's not common for a male to like that kind of show. It's not very common.
Not very common, yet you're talking to one of them, so.
well, hey, Ray, we're a minority, man. We're different. You like different people, man. We are not like everybody else, man, and that is okay.
Yeah, and that's why I don't call it a guilty pleasure. Just like, oh, this guy likes Dawson's Creek. No problem. Like, you know, if I don't like Dawson's Creek, it's a shock to people. You know what I mean? That's how it is.
When my wife and I first started living together, and we had our DVDs out, you know, you have your own apartment, you have the DVDs out there, you see what DVDs you own. People ask you, whose DVD is it? They're like, well, that's my wife's. And then a while, or people assume it's hers. No, that's mine. Mm-hmm. Dawson's Creek? Yeah, that's mine.
When I took a date home, and then she saw my DVD collection, and she's like, wow, you have more teen dramas and rom-coms on DVDs more than I do. I'm like,
oh my god,
yep,
really?
So you are
a One Tree Hill fan.
I haven't watched One Tree Hill yet.
You're not. I will say this, though, before we end this, obviously. I never watched Melrose Place. I do plan on watching it. I never watched Melrose 90210, the original, in its entirety. I do plan on watching it down the road.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So, one last thing before we go. It's like, I'm not sure if this will ever happen in my bucket list or whatever, but one day, I hope to be locked in a supermarket with a very, very hot girl, like Pacey did with Joey at one time in season 6.
You mean Walmart, right?
Something like that, yeah.
That was Walmart.
It was Walmart? Okay, I thought it was Kmart for some reason, but whatever. Yeah,
and that was Joey made up in a dress. And she, I mean, she was gorgeous.
Yeah. So let us have it in a supermarket, man. Thanks, DJ.
You got it, Ray.
This is Adam Jacoby, and if you're looking for a morality play, check out Ray Ray is Fundamental.
Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast episode. I have no idea what episode this is now. I think this is 47. But my guest for this episode, she works for the Big Ten Network. Used to be the sideline reporter for the New York Knicks. Does reporting for the New York Red Bulls. She's everywhere in the sports world. Tina Servasio, how's it going?
What's going on, Ray Ray? It's going good.
Yeah, but we miss you on the Knicks broadcast.
Yeah, this has been a good year not to cover the Knicks. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. 17 wins last season. I have my little niece here. I almost lost you. She almost hung up on you. But, yeah, there's a lot of drama that I'm glad I just didn't have to deal with, if you know what I'm saying.
Right, yeah. So, you still keep track of the Knicks, right? Despite their free fall as of late.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm working at NBA Radio on Sirius XM. So yes. I host shows there. So we've got those 30 teams. And, you know, I mean, this stuff this last week I was on this past week with Brian Scalabrine. And we spent like a whole hour on that whole Ramona Shelbourne article. On Phil Jackson reports, there's talk of him possibly coaching home games and Kurt Rambis coaching road games. It's just, it never stops. There's never a every day there's a new story with them.
Mm-hmm. And Phil Jackson thought of doing this in Los Angeles when he was coaching here, too, about coaching here at home games.
Right, but the late Jerry Buss at the time was like, no way, Jose. So, yeah, he didn't want anything to do with that. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I guess we're diving into the Knicks now. Derek Fisher fired after 53 games into the season, losing 9 out of 10 before he was canned. Right move, wrong move, what's going on here?
I was shocked. I thought it was early, and because I just did. I thought that Porzingis was developing well under him despite the win-loss record, and Carmelo was out 7 of those games. So, and he had just come back, and then, I mean, they lost a couple when he came back, but there's that whole getting reacclimated and Melo getting back into game shape. But who knows what underlying factors there were. We don't know what was going on behind closed doors. So, but I did think on the basketball side, I felt it was a little early, but I didn't think Fisher was going to last till next year. So, I mean, I guess now we're, you know, better earlier than never. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it was shocking, the timing, I thought. It was interesting.
But forward progress, right? I mean, after all, 17 wins last season.
Yeah, they were playing so well. I mean, they were 22-22 at one point. You know, at 500, Porzingis was, you know, double-double after double-double. Melo was averaging 30 points, well, close to it. He was playing well, and they were exciting to watch. They were coming back in games where they were down and they would win. There was a great game, fun ending in Utah, on the road to win in a place like that. So they showed a lot of resilience, and they were moving the ball. I mean, look, were they using the triangle as much as Phil Jackson wants them to know? I mean, I think we saw a little bit more of that penetration, pick and roll. That's when they were playing well, when they were integrating different elements beyond the triangle system. So, you know, it's just always complex with the Knicks. And once again, we're moving along. I think the big story is, does Carmelo stay? Does he decide to waive his no-trade clause? That'll be the big off-season story, unless they land a big free agent before that. If they do, you never know. And it all, and who's going to coach them? Who will be the coach? There's so many questions still.
Yeah. Phil Jackson's so complex because the last few years when he was at the Lakers, he didn't really run a lot of triangle. There was a lot of more pick and roll going on there. So this is surprising that he's like.
That's a good point. You know, it's a good point. But the thing is, too, like, and Kobe said it, and I mean, just from being around him last season and from doing previous interviews with Jackson, I had done some historic pieces for the Knicks from his playing days and had sat down with him before. I mean, you could just listen to him talk about basketball all day. So that's why I agree with Kobe Bryant. Give him time. He does know a lot about the game. So I don't know. Again, I feel bad for Knicks fans, though. They deserve a few more wins. It's just so crazy. But I do agree with Kobe. He knows there's something in there. It's just you could hear him, you could listen to him talk about games and players. And he's unique. He has that underlying very, you know, he makes things very complex. And there's like double meaning to a lot of things that he says. But once you kind of break through that, there's just such great knowledge there. So I don't know. It just, I would give Knicks fans some type of hope.
Right. On the bright side, though. Hello.
Can you hear my little niece? I know.
I can hear the little niece, yeah.
Talk to Fonzie TT. She wants me to pay attention to her.
She's adorable.
Thanks.
Did Christoph Porzingis surprise you? Like, he was out of the races.
Yeah. No joke. And people thought he, because of his, you know, he was so slim, he did put on about 11 pounds. You know, could he handle the NBA? And he sure could. Now, what's unique is, Rambis is using him different in the post a little more. So he's not getting as many rebounds as he had. Let's be honest too, he's hitting that proverbial rookie wall. It happens. Yeah. It's real. Ask any rookie. I mean, you ask any player that was a rookie once. So, I mean, that's, you know, it's, this is a grinding road trip. And they're not even, as I yawn, talking about their road trip. I'm home. I'm not, but I have wacky hours now. But I mean, after they play Golden State, which will be tonight when we're recording this, which is, I don't know what day this is, it's Wednesday, right? Mm-hmm. Today's Wednesday.
Yeah.
They don't play, they travel then to Washington, and they play the Wizards in two more days, so it's just a never-ending road trip that they're on. It's pretty insane.
Yeah. We'll get to the Warriors in a bit, but we always do. Let's move on to the rest of the East, where Cleveland, seems a lot of things are going on there, but you think it's just all white noise because of what's going on there? I mean,
I do. I think that's another team that attracts a lot of drama because of LeBron, and I think he does it to himself. It almost seems like this whole thing, like with his cryptic tweets, and we've talked about this so much, so much on NBA radio, he's smart, he knows how to play the game, and it was like, you know what, there wasn't much attention being put on the Cavs. I mean, they have led the East wire to wire. I mean, they do have Toronto on their tails, but they seem to be able to keep that two-and-a-half game lead constantly, and it's all the attention's on the West. You know, it's the Warriors, but can the Spurs beat them? The Spurs keep winning. The Spurs have their home winning streak. Look at the Warriors winning. You know, they're 50th straight at home. They have 60 wins now on the season. So it's almost like LeBron was like, well, we could create some stories too. So, there's still a lot to figure out with how to use Kevin Love, but it's almost like in the East, I'm not worried about them. They're going to win the East. They're going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. Does it take six games, seven games, maybe, to beat Toronto? But I don't believe that LeBron would ever let them lose in those situations. That's when he takes over the game. That's what he did for them in those two wins against the Warriors in the finals last year. Now, do they beat the Western Conference representative? That could be really interesting. They match up so differently with the Spurs and with the Warriors. So we'll see what happens there. And health, as we know, is a major issue. But it seems like Shumpert's getting healthier as time goes along here in the second half of the season. They played well a couple of nights ago. I mean, outstanding against the Clippers. And then they kind of, you know, dropped one there. Pretty embarrassing on the road against the Jazz. But they're still an elite squad. And I still think they do rule the East. There's just no getting by them.
But do you think anyone has a shot at unseating Cleveland? I guess besides Toronto. Anyone else there?
I would say it's only Toronto's got a slight chance, but after that, it drops off. It really drops off. I can't imagine in a seven-game series, Indiana, Chicago, any of those teams, with their injuries and with their inconsistencies, and just not having the amount of talent that the Cavaliers have. Yes, they have their various floor spacing problems with Kevin Love and not having the ball in his hands enough to be effective, etc. But that's a good problem to have because they have that much talent. And they're not even playing with Mo Williams. He's been out. Della Dova comes in and fills in fine off the bench for, you know, instead of Mo at the time. I mean, it's just amazing what they have there. And Channing Frye. I mean, that was a big addition.
Yeah.
And the way he spreads the floor, oh, Kevin Love needs a little sort to have Channing start. He drops five threes. I mean, so that's real. That was a great move by them. And he's doing exactly what they got him for.
Is the Bulls run over as we know it? Because Joakim Noah's out for the season. Derrick Rose, at this point, is no longer the MVP. No, looks like the MVP of the league.
The injury's to blame for that.
Yeah. Of course, there's still Jimmy Butler, but is this it for the Bulls?
I think they're a playoff team, though. I think they get in. I think they get in that eighth spot. Because, I mean, even without Powell, it'll be interesting, because so we have to find out what's going on with Gasol. I haven't seen the latest. I have not checked in on him since 12 noon, so I don't know if there's any recent news on him. But that could be a deciding factor down the stretch if they can maintain that eighth spot. The playoff team, they don't get out of the first round, though, obviously. So their run, was there ever a run? I mean, I don't know. I think, Joakim Noah is definitely done with them. It's interesting. I mean, you could trade Derrick Rose, give him a fresh start, get a lot back for him. Cause he, yeah, so 2 years left on this contract, I believe. I could be wrong, but it's interesting. I think Jimmy Butler stays. I think you keep Butler and you build around him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for this year, playoff team, but that's, they don't get out of that first round.
Yeah, that's true about them having not so much of a run because they made the East Finals in 2011, and then that was it, basically.
Yeah. It's just been such, it's always been a letdown with them. Such high expectations, but injuries have derailed them. And then the inconsistencies, and, you know, as great as a coach Thibodeau was, they still had, the problems he had with the front office impacted the team last year. So, I'll tell you what, I'm just dying to see where he lands next year. Where will he be the head coach? Because we need him back in the league. Great coach.
Yeah, exactly. For the West, barring injuries, this is like the million-dollar question, but is it a foregone conclusion for the Warriors to get 73 wins or more?
I don't think more. I think it could be interesting. I think they end up with 72, like right there. I don't know, because they still have those three games against
the Spurs,
and they play the Spurs Saturday. They have Dallas on the road. They have a rough schedule ahead. Dallas on the road Friday, and then the Spurs on Saturday. So, it, you know, kind of begins now. And again, like you said, barring injury, we know how that could change things. All the guys step up great for each other. We've seen how they played without their quote-unquote big three, if you want to call it that. It'll be interesting to see how they get out of these 2 weeks without Andre Iguodala, because that eliminates a lot of the depth they have, and the leadership as well. So it could be a really interesting 2 weeks here for the Warriors. I say they get to 72. I've been sticking with that on NBA radio.
Of course, Coach Popovich could sit those guys through the last 3 weeks or so.
See, that's going to be interesting, too. I feel like that last game against the Spurs is going to be a toss-up because nobody's playing.
Yeah.
I really don't think either side. So then it's not a true win-loss. So, but it means it's going to count. It's either going to be the 72nd win or the 73rd or the 71st, so, or not. So
right.
I really think that third game is a wash because at that point, Kerr and Popovich, I think, will be resting their players.
You don't think Kerr would go after the record if it's right there, if it's the last game?
If it's right there, these players do want it. The players do want their last game. I think it's the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Maybe they have 73 by the 9th, by April 9th against the Grizzlies, or maybe they don't. Maybe they have 72 wins that night. And then they play them.
Right.
They play everybody, wrap it up against the Spurs at home. Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's going to be so fun. Oh, when April 7th hits, those last 6 days of the season, it's going to be fun.
Is the season more fun because there are two dominant teams in the Warriors and the Spurs?
There's just so many storylines because of that. So I don't think it detracts from, there's been a lot of wild storylines too. I mean, I just keep following this whole Grizzlies storyline with all of their injuries, and yet they've still been able to eke out wins. And my big question is, they were fifth in the West, and do they make it into the postseason? Wait, hold on, my niece wanted to say hello. So they're still sitting there, fifth spot, but you have, I mean, the Trailblazers, they are like five games behind them. So, I mean, they've got a pretty good spot there, but with these injuries, can they withstand that and still make it in the postseason? That's an interesting little storyline I've been watching there, too. And the Clippers, do they get out of the second round? Do they make it two rounds? You know?
Yeah.
So
that's been going on for a few years now with the Clippers.
Yeah, and that can impact their future. That could, they can, if they don't make it out of the first round, I say they implode that team.
And there's still the Thunder with Kevin Durant's free agency coming up.
Yeah.
Westbrook next year. Yeah.
There's still the Thunder. And it's almost like they're just not talked about. And yet Westbrook has been brilliant with his three. They're 12-0 when he has a triple-double. And he has 12 triple-doubles this season.
That's incredible. That's the thing. It's like you throw in an ask for the Thunder. It's like, okay, so what do they do to have to win? And it's like Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. That's all they really need because that's what it takes for them.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And they've got great defensive players. I mean, Ibaka and Steven Adams. I mean, they have great defensive players, but I mean, you still have like Westbrook rebounding like a madman. It's amazing what they do. And yet they've lost some big important games. It, you know, when it comes to matching up against the Spurs and the Warriors, they haven't been able to play to their level.
Yeah, they can't close in the fourth quarter, which has been the ongoing storyline.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big lead right now. I know this isn't, you know, when people listen to it, it won't be live, but 20-point lead right now, 19 points over the Celtics, so playing well on the road right now, those Thunder.
Yeah, and then the fourth quarter, oh boy.
No, you just don't know, exactly.
That's when you get afraid. So, is it the Warriors, are the Warriors going back-to-back?
I think they do. I mean, what a disappointment. What an actual, I think the season's a failure if they don't win. Right?
Yeah.
After all the hype this year, but the thing is they've lived up to the hype. The Beatlemania, the wins, the, you know, going for 73, the home streak. I mean, they're 60-6 right now.
I wish I could win 60 times in 66 in anything, really.
Oh,
you know?
My gosh. I saw a stat with the Knicks playing them tonight. So Knicks are going into this game against the Warriors, and on paper they're 33 games behind them.
Well, the Lakers did beat the Warriors this year.
They did.
That.
But I blame that on LA nightlife. I think they got a little comfortable. And I know that the Warriors, the players, their coaches, they want to keep this home streak alive. Without a doubt.
Do I know about the LA nightlife?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. A year and a half when we talked about a little Star Wars, and since then, I've watched episodes 1 and 2, and I think they're awful.
Well, you've watched the prequels. You've got to watch Star Wars: A New Hope, and then
I did those like 3 years ago. So
oh okay,
yeah.
So you're done.
I haven't watched episode 3 yet.
So that's Return of the Jedi.
That's where we're at right now. Yeah,
that's a good one too. Empire Strikes Back is the best one out of all six. You didn't like it.
Oh, I love Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, okay.
I love. Yeah, that was my favorite one out of
good,
all of them.
Good, good, good.
Yeah. So, but 1 and 2, they're just awful, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes, the prequels were awful. Yes.
Okay.
Agree. Phantom Menace or whatever the first one was called, something like that.
What about 3? What about episode 3?
It gets a little bit better because it really sets up the whole Darth Vader story. Mm-hmm. So there's good information in it. Mm-hmm. No doubt.
So. Yeah, it's too bad my co-host couldn't be here, but because he loves cats. But
you did
name your cats Luke and Leia.
They are Luke and Leia. They're from the same litter, so they're brother and sister. And Luke looks just like Luke as you see him in the desert on his little sand dune, whatever his thing is called. I'm tired right now. What's it called, Kev?
Land speeder.
I was calling a sandstorm. I'm so tired. He's white and has little orange ears, so he's got like the sandy look. And then Leia, my cat, has black ears, just like the bun. The Leia bun.
So if you get any more cats, are you gonna name after Star Wars characters?
Yeah, like Yoda and Chewbacca, absolutely.
maybe Vader, C-3PO.
Yeah, a little black cat would definitely be Vader.
Fantastic.
Solid black though.
Yeah. So I noticed you ran the New York Marathon 3 times, and that sounds very exhausting. How do you do it?
Oh, I don't know if I'll ever do it again. It takes 4 months to train.
Wow, really?
And there's like this one day a week where you have to do your long run. So anywhere from like 13 to 24 miles. So that day is shot. That day is shot.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Because then you got to recover, and you're exhausted, and you're dehydrated. It's so rewarding, especially in New York. I mean, it's like a festival. It's a holiday. It's a huge sporting event. I covered it this year, which was a lot of fun as a reporter. Mm-hmm. So I got to cover it from the start for a Fox 5 affiliate where I work, and it was pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. I ask because I don't like running.
Yes.
And when I see someone run a marathon, I'm just like, how do you guys do this?
It takes me about 4 hours, 10 minutes is about what I run it in. But some people it takes like 6 hours. I don't know how they do it. And then the people that run it in like 3 hours, I don't know how the heck they can maintain that speed for that amount of time. Like average runners, like not the Olympians that finish, you know, in the top 10. I'm talking about people that I know that finish in under 3.5 hours. It's incredible. It takes, that's some serious training.
That's just insane. That, you said four months training. Wow. So
even
like,
longer. Even because you have to have base run to begin with. You have to be a runner to begin with. So if you're not, and a lot of people go from couch to marathon. So say for the New York Marathon, they would have to start now in March, creating a base for themselves, and then begin the intense training program end of June, beginning of July, where you have those long runs once a week, and then another day a week you do speed training, whether it's at a track or in an area where you do like sprints and then recovery runs. So it's a real deal. You're like really training like an athlete.
So do you increase your mileage as the days go by?
Exactly, yeah. As the week, you do it in like weekly increments. Exactly. And they've got programs. It's like, it's actually easy. You don't want to think at all. You don't have to. You could type in, there's programs, there's apps. You type in your fitness level and your time for a mile and all kinds of things, and it'll tell you the kind of program that will get you across the finish line in a respectable amount of time, and it'll give you that program over the course of 4 or 5 months. So it's pretty, and you don't have to think, you just follow it. Okay, today you run 5 miles. Today you run 3 miles at this pace. Today you run 10 miles at, a 10-minute, 50-second mile. It tells you exactly what to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just exhausted just, like, hearing this right now.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, it was okay, me too. Just talking about it.
Yeah, so you're not going to do it ever again, though, because you've already done it 3 times.
No, I think I'll definitely do it again. I don't, maybe in another city. Washington, I heard, is a little boring. Chicago, I heard, is great. So we'll see. I would like to do it again.
That's so 26 miles. Wow. I already complained.
Point two. So there's an extra 383 yards after that 26-mile marker. Yes, 26.2.
I already complain when I drive for 26.2 miles during this L.A. traffic. Apparently the worst ever or
no
something
doubt,
like that.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so go ahead and plug your Twitter, plug your social media, whatever there is on the internet.
Oh, yeah, so at Tina Servacio. And then nationally, if you have SiriusXM, I'm on NBA Radio this Sunday from 12 noon Eastern time to 2, so that'd be 9 a.m. out west. So 12 to 2 off the dribble weekend, and then I'm on Sunday morning, 7 a.m. Eastern time, so it's really early for the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually my schedule for next weekend as well. Actually, next weekend, the 26th and 27th, I believe I'm on both days, 7 a.m., so it's NBA weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with Brian Gelfiler from HoopsCritic.com. So we have a good time on the weekends, and I usually do the morning shows, so that's fun because you get to, plug the personality bit of it, so... We were debating who was the first man on the moon the other day. So sometimes it goes awry. it's not always about basketball.
Yeah, I try to talk about basketball a lot of the podcast later. So, like Star Wars and marathons. And,
exactly.
And beauty pageants or stuff like
that. Oh, God, no doubt.
Yeah, so thanks again, Tina, and we'll do this again someday.
Sounds cool. Good, Ray. Thanks for having me on again. Take care.
Awesome, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Molded.